I hope that we can have a good time in the Word this morning. Have you ever felt like everything was going through your mind and in the late hours of the night, and you felt like the thoughts were coming, and then you wake up in the morning and you feel like, where did all those thoughts go? Well, that's how I feel. That's how I felt this morning when I woke up. So I just ask for your prayers this morning. This week turned out a little different. I'm here to try to lead this Bible study. I didn't have a lot of time. I'm blessed that Brother Jonathan was also awake in the late nights preparing a message, because Frank couldn't be here. But last night I was just felt so blessed in the Word that it seemed like the thoughts were coming, and the topic that was on my mind was the sweet savor of worship to God versus, well, it started by the topic of idolatry in my mind. I don't know why that popped in Saturday or whenever it was or Friday sometime when I decided to do this. I don't know why that popped in my mind. And I the topic of idolatry, and we all know the verse in Exodus that says, it's actually the first of the commandments that says, I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Then it says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. So I went to that topic, and I didn't get very far into, well, the thought came to my mind, when did the term idols, or what, where did that even start? Like, how did that even come to something that, what do you think of when you think of an idol, or like Exodus says, a graven, in this case, it talks about a graven image. I don't see that today the way they had it, where they would have a grove and they would have an image that they would erect in a grove, and they would go out and bow before this god in they had these places where they set up Baal and all these things. And do we see that in this land? Do, like, physically see that in North America? Has anyone ever seen a great... Mike, do you want to let us... As they bring Mike the mic.
I remember years ago working in someone's house, and...
Okay, anyone else? Ibra, you can just speak if you have... Is that right?
Yes.
So did he call you and say he hasn't? And what did he tell you? Okay. No. So that physical element is actually closer than I thought it was. Obviously, if you go into India and places like that, Randy, did you see idols? Lots of them,
Yeah, I would. A lot of think Buddha, people would worship them. And they can just be beside the road even, and people would worship them, I don't know, a few times a day, or they probably have their set times. But, yeah, you see a lot over there in Asia countries of Buddha, or it can be different things, too, that they would worship. They worship their animals. But I was just thinking, for over here, I don't see a lot of physical idols, but I think we have to watch in our own lives that we don't start worshiping our work, or it can be even our vehicles. I think it's anything that we put before in place of God.
Yes, absolutely. Ibra. Yeah, so what is a statue? Like when people erect, say, you go into a city and you see a statue erected, or a sports, sometimes a sports coliseum, they'll have a live statue of a former celebrity that, you know, like what do we make of that? Maybe some of those things in the day and age we live in are more subtle, and in our hearts we don't bow down, physically bow down, but there can be we don't physically bow down to them and say, oh, thou great hockey player or whatever. But in our hearts maybe we've lifted them up. But, Mike?
In my mind, a statue just takes a picture a little bit farther. And sometimes they're historical, and no one really even thinks of worshiping them. An idol is specifically for worshiping.
Thank you for your comments. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 4 says, as concerning therefore, well, it talks about the eating of idols, which I'm not going to get into, but it says, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other God but one. And when David was talking about worship, that blessed my heart so much that we can come here and worship that true and living God. And I don't want to distract from that at all with talking about idols, and because it says they're nothing. Idols are nothing in this world. And I forget which scripture I read last night talked about, I mean, them being dumb, and there's absolutely, I mean, how, I mean, the thousands and millions of people that would have in the past have taken daily time to go to the groves or wherever and bow down and worship some empty nothingness, right? And think, which in a sense the devil, I'm sure, is right there when they're bowing down to those graven images. I believe the devil is hearing everything that they're saying. Maybe I'm wrong, but What I was going to turn to was Genesis chapter 5. Because I was trying to find the first place in the Bible that talked about people lifting up something other than God and actually worshiping it. And then I got sort of, I don't know, maybe not sidetracked, but maybe I got onto some other terminology that stuck out to me and probably involved idols, but maybe didn't say idols. Because in Genesis chapter 5, what I wanted to, the highlight, one thing that I just want you to remember in this study, if there's anything that to take home is the two things, the sweet savor of worship to God, and how that is such a blessing to read about in Genesis. So the key word that I have, and we're going to look a little bit through Genesis 5 through 11, but the key word in Genesis 8:21, and maybe I'll just mention that just to give give that out right now. Genesis 8 verse 21 says, "And the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, 'I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake.'" And then it says, "For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done." And we all know when that happened. That was after all the wickedness of the world was crushed under the flood and destroyed. But in Genesis chapter 5, verse 1, "This is the book of the generations of Adam. In the day that God created man," and then it says, "In the likeness of God created, in the likeness of God made he him." So God was the first one. He was the God that made something in his own image. So why is it wrong for man to make something? What is at the heart of all that? I believe that was such a holy and a beautiful thing, how God made us in his image, and then we are then to worship him and not make other things that would distract from that. And some other things that I would like to point out was, actually, this is in Genesis 5, verse 24. It says, "And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him." And that spoke to me too. When we're walking with God, so close to God, there's just no room for... I don't think Enoch ever stopped in his walking with God and said, "Wait a minute, I need to spend a time in prayer to this graven image," or whatever. And Enoch walked with God. Moving on to Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 to 7. And this is where I felt was the beginning of something really... It's showing... some things that are happening in the world. And we've heard this many times, but in verse 5 it says, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." I think there was probably idols and things like that already happening. Maybe not. Maybe there was not any graven images at this time. But it says, "Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart." And the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them." But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. I don't think Noah set up an idol. It says in verse 11, the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Is it any different today? It says, the earth was filled with violence. There is so much there is so much of that lifted up in this world. Even all the media that talks about the violent things that people do, and those that are just waiting to do violent things. Because they turned their eyes from God. God made them in his own image. And then they were doing this, all this evil imaginations. Genesis 7:21-22. It says, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both the fowl, the cattle, and beasts, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man, and in all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, of all that was in the dry land, died. And then in chapter 8 of Genesis it says, and God remembered Noah. Why did God remember Noah?
God remembered Noah because he was righteous in his generation.
Sorry, I missed that.
Noah was righteous in his generation. And so God didn't destroy him. I'm not sure what righteous in your generation means exactly, but I was looking in 1 John. Here it says, you're talking about why do people have idols? This would be my perspective on that. And we know the Son of God has come and hath given us understanding that we may know him who is true. And we are in him who is true, in his Son, Jesus Christ. This is the true God in eternal life. And then he tacks on the end there in verse 21, little children, keep yourselves from idols. And, you know, even the American dream that we talk about is idolatry. Because we establish as men, we go, in our world, we go rich man, poor man. The rich are honored. Whether their morality in their life is good or evil, we often excuse a rich man for his immoral living much quicker than we will excuse a poor man for his. And the media and everything is wrapped up in that. And so the push then is to become famous and wealthy and the pursuit of happiness, which is a kind of an interesting statement because it's not the fulfillment of happiness, it's just the pursuit thereof. So where is the end of happiness in our world? And so, I think there's a danger. I don't think idols are necessarily always physical idols. Buddha and those things, mm-hmm. You know, they exist and they're real, but in the evangelical church, or even amongst us, I think the idols is that pursuit of something to fill our lives outside of the power of Christ. And when we don't feel Christ's hand in our life, we will seek and seek. And sometimes we don't seek the Lord to fill that. And I think we enter at that point into idolatry. So we go do it by the works of our own hands.
Yes.
Subsequently, we build our own churches and our own religions, and you know, but God is not in it. I think it's something we have to be careful about.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there with those last few sentences, especially on the. And that's what they were doing. They had evil imaginations in their heart. Anyone else to add to that? Okay. Moving to after God remembered Noah in verse 20 of chapter 8, Noah builded an altar unto the Lord. And he offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake. That's what reaches God is those, that sacrifice, that the Lord smelled that. It came to him. It reached him. So moving on into Genesis chapter 9 then. God shows that rainbow in the sky. And promises as well here that he's not going to destroy the earth like this again. And I had to think of that, how he brought that rainbow in the sky. That was just probably when the flood came to destroy all that idolatry and violence, and that was moisture like never before, obviously. When we have a downpour, a torrent of rain that pours and pours, you know, we think that's a lot of water in a short time. But when the flood came, the fountains of the deep were opened up, and I mean, it poured, and this rain that would have happened. Like, this might have been the first rain after the flood, and just that gentle rain that God brought down, or a cloud came. It says a cloud came, and then how would a bow appear in the cloud is obviously by having some droplets of water and the sun shining on them, right? We know how that works, but wouldn't that have just caused you to worship the Lord? Like, here is now a gentle rain coming down from God, and a bow in the sky, meaning that the sun is shining, or that you can see the sun shining, meaning that the storm is over, or the rain is over, and here's my promise, Noah. What worship would have taken place? Can we just... Like, being in the ark for, I don't know, it was a long, long time. Well, it wasn't just 40 days and 40 nights. It wasn't just 40 days and 40 nights and 150 days, but it had to dry up and all that. All right. So what happens now? What is the next thing that you can think of that happened in Genesis that showed that there was still evil men? Okay? That one wasn't what I was thinking about, but I would. The bottle becomes the idol pretty soon if we let it.
Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel is what I was thinking. In terms of sort of defiance, or we're going to build something. We're not going to be scattered. We're the people. Nimrod was a mighty man. Can't find that verse right off the top here. Oh, in chapter 10. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And in verse 4 of 11, it says, "Let us make a name, lest we be scattered around abroad about upon the face of the whole earth." And you know, they built all this up, and they were so high. And what does the next verse say? If you look at Genesis 11, verse 5. Does anybody anybody know what happened? Genesis 11, verse 5, Stephen.
It says, "The Lord came down," and he's basically, to paraphrase it, he came down, he saw what was going on, and he was not pleased.
Yes.
So he messed up their language, or everybody started speaking a different language, and they couldn't communicate, and Everybody went their own way.
And they were scattered. But just that sentence that you said, "and the Lord came down," I mean, it shows how mighty and awesome our God is. They built this whole thing up to try to build it, and the Lord still came down.
A comment on Nimrod there about, it's said of him, it was used as said of Nimrod that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and a comment that I got from somewhere else was that that simply meant that Nimrod's first love was hunting, or the mighty hunter. He was a mighty hunter. He was a mighty person. He was, and before the Lord, it was himself and the Lord. Now we see at Babel, we see the result of the idolatry of the heart, where here was a man who is, I would expect, probably physically quite mighty, quite intelligent, quite, but he worshipped himself, I presume. Everything was before the Lord. He didn't have time for God or care either.
Oh, so you would take that as he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, meaning he put things in his life ahead of God. Is that how? Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if we're all honest with ourselves, I could ask each one of you to say what in your life, or to share with, and it might be a good thing, actually. It might be a good thing to share with us all what in your life would be the first thing in your life that would be the thing that would take you away from God. Because I'm sure there... Ivan, go ahead. And it might help us to... we're not going to do that, but...
I was just thinking about when you read here of the Tower of Babel, how they wanted to establish a name, or maybe even have a safe place if there would be a flood or whatever. And I was thinking in our generation, like mentioned, I've seen idols too, like Buddha and stuff in Toronto and different homes already, but it's not something we see that much. But I think our generation, our time, especially in our religious community, it would be anything that is set up as a safeguard other than Jesus Christ is an idol. Mm-hmm. Like if we set something up to keep us in a relationship with Jesus, that's an idol. And that can be, and in our culture, we sometimes see people do that, mm-hmm. and we accept it, and we're fine. We wouldn't struggle to maybe even encourage him. I'm thinking about Ibra maybe getting his loader to help lift him up. Like, we actually support that, and therefore their foundation cannot be true, because it's something other than Jesus Christ. And our generation, it's just so different than what we see in the Bible, yet it is the same foundational things.
Yes. Maybe on that note, we'll turn to Romans 2. I think, Ivan, that comment, those comments brought it together here beautifully into what my closing comments are in Romans chapter 2. And I don't have time to read the whole chapter. Maybe I'll just Paul was talking about the guilt of the Jews. And there is the word sacrilege, and I think that's what, you know, in verse 22 of Romans chapter 2 is maybe the key verse that I was thinking about. But maybe we can pick up in verse 21. Thou therefore which teachest another, or 20, an instructor of, maybe just kind of, it's hard to know where to pick up in this chapter, but the thought that I was wanting to bring out is, the Jews, I believe, had their rituals or their laws lifted up too high here. And Paul is saying, thou therefore which teachest another, teachest now thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? In other words, a false profession or inconsistency. Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols? So, they hated idols, as it were, in their laws or whatever. But did they? Did they really hate idols? Or what was the idol? It says, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. For circumcision verily profiteth, if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, shall not this uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision does transgress the law? For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And we can take this the right way. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. And that is the spiritual life that we want. And idols will be like Enoch. We'll be walking with God, and there won't be any room for anything that exalts itself or that means more to us than God in our life. And so I'll close on that note, that may our offerings be a sweet savor to God, and may there not be anything in our life that would take us away from God. We'll have some song, maybe one or two songs.